we have we're specifically the survey is closing at the end of December. The month. Right. So at the end of this month.
Yeah.
And we're
on
really
December
looking,
30th, you said? You had told me
31st.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're really looking for like indigenous, Black, Asian, Latinx, and Middle Eastern participants. Like it is, I can't stop saying it, but it's such an important research. We need people to participate because we need to make changes to our systems and to the care that's being offered to people.
Okay.
Especially here in Quebec.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yo, I forced sterilization. Like we did talk a bit about it on, I think we talk about it off the air, which is why I don't like to get into conversations off the air too much. Did we talk about it while we were on the air? Because there's a history of forced sterilization just in general,
yeah.
In general for all women. I don't know the dates, but I know that there was a period of time where women were getting hysterectomies. And this is in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that women who experienced quote unquote hysteria were, and please don't quote me on this. I'm just trying to do it from memory. Women who like had to go into like psychological psych homes, you know, like homes where people are being treated for mental health disorders, were then diagnosed with hysteria and then given a hysterectomy, saying something to the effect of basically it's because of her reproductive organs that she's going crazy, so we need to remove the reproductive organs. And now we're getting to a point where this type of situation is still happening, but not necessarily with the excuse of mental health, but for no reason.
For no reason. But there are reasons.
Right.
But so when you say for no reason,
well, no
I
reason.
Would say for no medical.
Right.
For no medical reason.
Medically supported reason. Yeah.
Medically supported reason. But there is a reason.
Right.
There is a reason. What is that reason? That reason is
a form of population control with regards to the BIPOC.
Population control. I was looking for a word. Yeah, but basically,
almost like
it's
a form of genocide.
Genocide. Voila. That's what I was looking for. So there is a reason. It was much, much more documented. It is much, much more documented in the States, right?
Right, of course.
So I think it's in California. Don't quote me on that. I think it's in California. Well, it happens a bit everywhere.
Of course.
In the States, but there were cases in California in prisons.
Yes.
In prisons, women's prisons. It was happening a lot. More recently, there was this story about like ICE that was accused of sterilizing detainees. How you say that?
Detainees.
Who were crossing the border, right? So you have that most recent stories.
Yeah.
Here in Canada, what has been documented is what happened to Indigenous women, the forced sterilization of Indigenous women. You have in Nova Scotia, you have documentation on Black women being receiving that same treatment too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening everywhere. It's happening in Quebec too. It's been happening in Quebec too, mostly Indigenous people, but it's been happening to Black women too.
Yeah.
And we don't have those numbers. We don't have those information.
Yeah.
So I was telling you, we did that show with Enquête, with Radio-Canada. After the show aired on September 23rd, my God, I received emails, phone calls of women telling me it happened to me too.
Right.
And it happened to me too, not in the 1800s. No, 2000.
Yeah.
As close as like 2018, 2019.
Wow.
It happened yesterday. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
So what's in their mind that they think they can do that? Why people are not saying and talking more about this, those issues?
Yeah.
Puis je vais le dire en français, pourquoi il n'y a pas un soulèvement? Pourquoi il n'y a pas une révolte?
Why isn't there a revolution? Why isn't there a revolution? An unveiling.
I mean, and before, like when the story of George Floyd happened.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I made a post because I was seeing all those, I'll say it, allies.
Yeah.
Supposedly allies. All being so mad and, oh my God, this is outrageous. And how can this happen? And it's like, wait a minute. It's been happening here in Quebec too.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Yeah.
That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, okay, now that you're outraged about the whole police brutality, racial profiling.
Yep. What are you going to do about it now?
What are you going to do about it? Okay. But I said this. I said, you know, the reason we came to know about it is because it was filmed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we doing about women birthing people or not birthing people, just going to the hospital for interventions,
mm-hmm.
who are sterilized against their will, who are mistreated, who are living violence,
mm-hmm.
who cannot, and those are going on in hospital settings, in operation rooms where there are no cameras.
Right.
So when are we going to talk about that? I posted this in June 2020 or in July. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this woman, oh, those are big accusations you're making here. Like you're giving no names and this. And I said, wait, it's going to come out.
Right.
Just wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, the tragic
September
story,
this year?
2020.
Okay, no, sorry.
Joyce Ishakwan died.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? She filmed herself.
Yes, yes.
And then I was like, see? So that was the beginning. And then, of course, me, I knew of a story, the story that came out with Enquête of that woman that I was supporting in her quest for justice or for answers because she had a tubal ligation.
What's that?
Without her consent. She had her tubes tied.
Okay.
Without her consent during a C-section.
Hmm.
So me, I knew, I didn't know it was going to come out, her story in particular.
Right.
Because it was in the plan in the beginning. But when Enquête, their journalist team contacted me. They wanted to talk about racism in the healthcare system in general.
Right.
So they were like, we're contacting you. We would like to have you on the show. And I was telling them about what I was working on and the woman I was working with. And they were like, really? And they were really skeptic. In the beginning. So they did their research. They called me back and they were like, you know what? I think we're going to do the show on forced sterilizations.
Yeah.
Because what we found is unbelievable. So I said, yes, see, just
it's,
had
it's
to dig a little.
It's interesting that, you know, when it comes to especially Black women, especially Native women, especially women of color, and in that order, I will say, it has to be proven.
Yeah.
You know, your word is not good enough. What you say is not good enough. You have to prove it. It has to be caught on camera before anyone will take any action. It has to have been documented before we will believe you. You know, as you were saying that, you know, it takes me back to the 1990s when the LA riots happened because, man, why am I forgetting that brother's name? That brother that was beaten by like a dozen cops.
Rodney King,
yes. If someone hadn't taken out their camera at the time and filmed that, that nothing would have come of it. I mean, the LA riots is a tragedy, and please don't get me wrong, anybody listening out there, I do not support that kind of way of protesting. I believe that it is our right as human beings to protest and to speak out against any kind of violence whatsoever. But you know, the importance of like having your camera available is like it's life saving. You know, like you almost need to be recording wherever you go, whenever you're having interactions with certain people. You know, you have to make sure that you can actually prove what's been said. Doesn't matter who says it.
And it's sad.
That's crazy to me.
It's really sad.
We just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we're speaking to Ariane K. Metelus, who is giving us a wealth of information that I haven't heard before. There is a documentary that is out. What's the documentary called?
On m'a volé ma fertilité. On,
they stole my fertility, which is on
Radio Canada.
Okay, I'm gonna be finding a link and posting that everywhere. We do have to take another break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
People they know they follow. People they know they copy. People all up in my grotto. They see me like a genie, try to keep me in a bottle. Petty, petty people keep them incommunicado. They tie you up in strings and play niggas like pizzicato. Lose sight of the picture, scripture, now they not so steady. Meanwhile, I'm like Curtis Mayfield getting people ready. See into the future, then cut through like a machete or cutlass. All these trappers leaving niggas gutless. You can't make moves for justice, you can't make no adjustments. Drowning in corruption, Charlie addict. Convenience. Now they got you caught up in calling freedom extremist. We're not in agreement. I won't lay down politely. I closed my mouth for years and they still tried to fight me. I sat down on the sidelines and they still tried to bite me. They buried my career and promoted my peers to spite me. But they can't tell me nothing, Charlie. They don't underwrite me. I've had a lot of money thrown at me. None of that shit excites me. It's just another kind of cage to get up in my psyche. To use me as an instrument to further push their puppet show. But I'm not inexperienced and it's not my first rodeo. I'm not so shallow, Charlie. I call it too precisely. Separate bone from marrow so much so that they dislike me. Intuitive. Charlie, we be like fugitives. Until the universe responds to show them who the student is.
Woman cry.
Woman cry.
Gives
us life.
Mother Mary and baby, the burden she carries all time.
Burden she carries.
Woman cry. The sinners all time.
So them I go make war before we pray. So them I go make war before we pray. What them I go make war before we pray.
Yes, we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am here with Ariane K. Metalus. And she's just been giving us a wealth of information. Like, when we first were talking during the break before the show, we wanted to cover so many topics, and, like, I was telling her during this most recent break, we're going to have to bring you back on, Ariane, because this is going to have to be a two-part show, because there's a lot that needs to be addressed and spoken of. So just a little bit of a recap. We've been speaking about the fact that Ariane was a doula, and she does a lot in terms of perinatal care and birth care. And she works on the steering committee of the RESPECT study, which is the research examining stories of pregnancy and childbearing in Canada today. And there is a website that is doing a survey and finding out about people who have given birth within the last 10 years, and of course focusing more on BIPOC individuals. If you want more information on that, there's quite a few studies that have been done, not only in Canada but also in the States. There are documentaries. We found one called Belly of the Beast, which is California's dark history of forced sterilizations. Ariane is featured in a show. Called Enquête, on m'a violé ma fertilité. So they have stolen my fertility. And you can actually find that on YouTube. So I'm going to be posting that on our various pages, social media, etc. Ariane, Enquête.
Yes.
I was telling you during the break, I'm just so enraged by this information. It's like, it doesn't make sense in my brains why people do this thing. Why are people doing this? I've been rendered speechless, even though this is a medium in which we're supposed to speak. It's crazy to me that these things happen, and, you know, we're not in the dark ages.
Mm.
You know,
it is. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I think, to understand what's going on today,
mm-hmm.
what is still going on today, I think we really need to explore and to learn about our history. And when I talk about our history, I talk about the history of obstetrics, the history of gynecology, because the modern gynecology and obstetrics that we have today,
mm-hmm.
when you go back, well, the father, and I hate to say that, but the father of modern gynecology, Dr. Sims, he actually practiced on enslaved women.
Yep.
Without
anesthetics.
Any kind of anesthetics. So we have to go back there and go up the timeline to understand where all those mistreatments and violence, all that violence comes from.
Yeah.
It just didn't appear yesterday.
Yeah.
It's been there all along, and it's being taught in different terms. They changed the wordings.
Yeah.
It's more subtil,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, those things are still being taught today.
Yeah.
So the new generations of doctors and health professionals, I find they're more aware, and they really do their best. And I talk about the younger generation, and some a lot in the oldest generations, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So we need to learn more about the history to understand better and to do better eventually.
But what do we do? What do we do the system obviously is not going to change overnight. What do we do until then?
I mean, shows like this one, yours, we talk about it. We talk about it until people believe, until people see. We talk, we inform, we educate. That's one thing. If it happened to you, to somebody you know, you talk, you get the discussion, you get the conversation going. There's something about speaking up. And even if it's speaking up to yourself, even if it's recognizing that something happened to you, even if it's writing it down, writing your story. Sorry about the noise. You know, because some people are not ready to talk about what happened to them.
Just like any other kind of trauma. I mean, like,
you have to
go through a process before you're going to open up about it. Especially open up in a very public way.
And
you're opening up yourself to all kinds of like repercussions as well. You might get positive feedback from people who are like, I'm sorry you went through this. What can I do to support you? Da 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 da. And then you can get the other people who are going to gaslight you and be like, "No, well, I've had children and I've never had that experience. And no, you must be lying, and that can't be true, etc."
Exactly. Oof. So yeah, we need to talk about it, because what it does also is that people are isolated around those stories.
Yes.
Or they think they're alone. Or they think they're crazy for thinking that, oh, was that person like being violent towards me? Did that person really say what I think they said? Sorry if you hear some background noise. It's the baby. And it creates... I mean, you have the trauma, but it does create all those violences, everything, all those trauma. They create mental health issues.
100%.
And so now we've talked about what it is, what it does, but what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
Where are those people go? Where can they turn to? Mm-hmm. Who can they turn to once they've gone through all this? And that's the hardest part, because we don't have a lot of structures in place to support people who went through things like that. And that's where I'm at with my work now. You were saying, oh, you were a doula. Are you still a doula? What are you doing? Well, that's, you know, my work is going towards now that.
Yeah.
How can I support people who went through those traumatizing experiences?
Ariane, tell us, I'm just like, I want to keep talking, but we only have an hour and a half. tell people where they can find you. If they want more information, as well as where they can get onto the Respect site and stuff like that.
So where they can find me, I'm not good with social media. I try to post as much as I can. I'm kind of social media shy. I know.
You say that, but I'm like, if I didn't see your social media, I wouldn't have contacted you to, you know, so you don't have, I don't think you have to be posting like every 2 seconds in order for the information that you're providing to be effective. You know, that's one way effective is good. You know, sometimes less is more.
Thank you. So I'll try to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
With that being said, so I'm on Instagram, so arianka.perinatal, or you can just look up for Ariane Metellis, you're gonna find it. I'm on Facebook. I haven't really been active on my professional Facebook page, so it's Ariane K. Accompagnante. Yeah, those are the where I'm most active. Right now I've been taking a break because I'm taking care of my mental health, to say the truth right now. But I try to stay available to people who need to talk and who just need information. So yeah, you can find me there for the respect study. So what's interesting about the respect study is that it has been translated in many languages.
Right.
So you have Chinese, you have different indigenous languages, you have Arabic, Punjabi, you have Spanish, of course, English, French. So it's really interesting. So if you want to go to the main page, it's www.respcct.ca. So it's not like respect, it's really R-E-S-P-C-C-T.
Yes. Make a new song out of that.
Yeah. So yeah. And go watch the documentaries and go and inform yourself. Take care of yourself. And, you know, you were saying before, for us men, we're not that concerned, but entre guillemets.
Quotations, yeah.
I think you have a big role to play in everything that has been said today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to take care of yourselves too, as men. You need to support and be there for your partner. But you can do a lot too. You can get informed around those topics. You can advocate. You can amplify those voices and those stories and those disinformation. Don't stay passive because you're not the one carrying a child, because you're not the one feeding, breastfeeding, chest feeding the baby. Don't stay passive.
Right.
Go out there, share the information, share the studies, share the documentaries, share what you learn.
Yeah.
With the people around you.
Definitely. Well, thank you for telling me that. I already plan to do all of that and as much as I can as possible. Ariane, thank you so much for taking the time out. You know, it can't be easy with a huge family and with everything that you have, all the responsibilities that you have right now. And I feel blessed to have been able to have this conversation with you, and I hope our listeners appreciate that as well. So the website to participate in the study is respectrespcct.ca, and that is going to be up until the 31st of December. It takes about 20 minutes to complete, and it's got a multitude of languages. That it's available in a multitude of languages, so you don't have to worry about not being able to understand anything that's written if you belong to that group. Thank you again, Ariane, for being here, for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
We do have to bring you back and do a part two because, like I said, we didn't get into all of what we wanted to talk. We kind of outlined what we wanted to talk about, but we didn't get into all of it. But we'll be bringing you back on for sure.
It will be my pleasure.
Yes. If you're just tuning in, that's it for this evening. We have been Soul Perspectives. My name has been Kim Dominique Ferguson, and you are listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM.
Just we go. 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 Just we slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.
When you tell your girlfriend, get changed, you're dressed like a tramp. Change your password so I can see your messages. When are you going to change your mind, you stubborn idiot? Change your attitude when you talk to me. Change your friends. You better change your tone of voice. It's not up to her to change. It's up to you. Violence against women stops now. Talk about it. Do something about it. And call SOS Violence Conjugale. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-COVID-19. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montréal.
Puisque ça fait plus d'un an qu'on le mentionne, et que de toute façon vous le savez probablement déjà, on a décidé de ne pas vous le dire. Donc, on ne vous redira pas que pour se protéger de la COVID-19, il faut se laver les... On ne répétera pas encore une fois qu'il faut porter un... Et surtout, qu'il faut garder nos... avec les autres. Vous le savez, c'est la meilleure façon de combattre le virus, même lorsqu'on est vacciné. On continue de se protéger. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marca Ro. Ascoltate emissione di radio Marca Ro, per 90.3 FM CKUT.
Professor Schwartz, and thank you for your time, and thank you for being here with us at Marcaro, the Romanian radio show, and not only the trilingual radio show. You're the director of the Office for Science and Society at McGill University. You're an expert in food and water, right?
I hope so.
And it looks like you're one of the best here in Quebec and Canada. Why did you choose this area of activity?
It just evolved. I've always been interested in science ever since I was in elementary school. So I knew that I was going to have that as a career. But it started with just, you know, conventional teaching. And then I started to infuse more and more everyday science into all my courses. And about 40 years ago, you know, I started to get asked to speak to groups of all kinds. And it just evolved from there. And then, of course, I always kind of had my fingers on the pulse of the public, knowing what they were interested in. So I always, you know, emphasize that. And food and water are obviously in everyone's minds all the time, along with medications, you know, and to a smaller extent, cosmetics. Those have also been of great interest. And generally, history of science, because I like to, you know, tell people that if we don't know where we've been, you won't know where you're going. So history is always a part of it. And of course, the current events and whatever comes up. And obviously, for the last 2 years, we've had to deal with this damn virus. So food and water have always been a, you know, major area.
Do you think young people are more interested in this type of information now than, let's say, 30 years ago or 40 years ago?
I think so. Of course, a lot of that is because the information is so much more readily available. 30 years ago, if you wanted to do any kind of research, look into any topic, you'd have to go to the library. These days, the library comes to you, right? Young people, all their students, they're on Facebook, they're on, you know, all the other platforms, Instagram and TikTok and God knows what else. So even if they're not interested, they hear about all of these things, you know, because it's just all over. So it's easier to get interested when you have such a, you know, wide scope of information that is available, which unfortunately is also a double-edged sword, because along with all of that high-quality information comes all the misinformation and the disinformation. And if you're not, you know, sort of scientifically attuned, it's hard to separate the sense from the nonsense, because a lot of the nonsense can sound very sensible.
Yeah, that was actually my question. Like, it's very hard to see what is fake news versus especially with the vaccination, we saw that, like, a lot of false information.
It is very difficult for someone who does not have a science background, because the pseudoscience promoters are unfortunately very good at what they do. They can make it sound very compelling. And, you know, these conspiracy ideas can sound logical to people who just don't have the time or the inclination or the know-how to dig into it and to read the original literature. And, you know, I mean, that's why I always make sure that whatever we are talking about, whatever we are promoting, is evidence-based. And that it comes from the proper peer-reviewed scientific literature, not from hearsay and not from emotion.
Let me ask you, my first question is, how clean is, well, it's not my first question, but anyway, related to the, you know, water, and how clean is the water in we drink in Quebec or in Canada?
It all depends on how intricately you look. Because today, thanks to my colleagues, the analytical chemists, we have unbelievably sophisticated equipment. We can find things down to the part per trillion range. Now, just to give you an idea of what that means, if you compare the width of a credit card to the distance between the Earth and the Moon, the width of that credit card is one part per trillion, okay? We can find that. Now, here is where the issue comes in. Just because something is there does not mean that it is in any way active, either harmfully or beneficially. That takes a lot more investigation. So in one sense, we are the perpetrators of our own problems, because of the fact that we can find substances down to such small numbers. And the fact is that we are getting to a point where everything is contaminated by everything else. you know, at the degree of part per trillion, because, you know, you touch a desk or you touch another person, no matter what, you transfer material, which we can find, because we can find it, you know, in the part per trillion range. So when we are looking like that, there are hundreds of compounds that are present in any sample of water, because that water has been in contact with soil, it's been in contact with air, it's been in contact with runoff from agricultural fields, etc. And then, of course, there's all the sewage that goes into the water, all the drugs that we take and we pee out remnants of, you know. So, of course, one can find all kinds of compounds in the water, and you can scare people about this. If you leave out the numbers, if all you say is this was found, okay? But that's not the way real science works. The next question has to be how much, and how does that compare to what we know is potentially toxic or not? And that's not always so easy to answer, you know, because there are substances indeed that are potentially toxic in very small amounts, lead being a classic example. So even though, you know, lead may only be present at 10 parts per billion, which of course is still a significantly larger amount than the part per trillion range. Yeah, but it's worrisome even at that level. So it depends on which chemical we're talking about and at what dose. And also, obviously, where in the world you are. Because not all water purification systems are as sophisticated as what we have here. I mean, in Montreal, we have a very high quality water filtration system. Does it take out every impurity? Of course not. That's impossible to do. No. Does it matter? I think no. I think that in context of everything that we're exposed to, the trace amounts of substances found in the water are not likely to have an effect on our health. I mean, after all, you know, the average life expectancy gets longer every year. So we're not doing everything wrong.
Are our immune systems compromised? Because, yeah, you're saying, you know, the water is pretty well treated and stuff. But however, we see a lot of young people sick. Like we're talking about 50% of the Canadian population will have cancer at a certain point, right? Why no, so?
It's not 50%. It's less than that. At most it's about 1 in 3. But what you have to take into account is that cancer is an age-related disease, and as the average as our longevity increases, so will the number of cancer cases. Because indeed, if you live long enough, something will go wrong in the way that cells multiply in the body, and that's when cancer comes about. So what we really need to do is look at age-related cancer rates, which are adjusted for age, and there is no increase. In fact, in some cancers, there's a decrease. Breast cancer rates are actually going down. Overall, when you lump all of the cancers together, the incidence is a flat line. It has not been going up. But the total number of cases has gone up because the total number of people has gone up and people are living longer. But we do not have, as some activists claim, we do not have an epidemic of cancer. I mean, that is just not scientifically correct when you look at the numbers. I mean, obviously, any cancer is worrisome. Now, of course, we want to cut down on that. But water is not the prime source. I mean, fact is that our air is actually more worrisome than the water. There are more potentially carcinogenic compounds that we inhale from the air than that we ingest from the water. And we are never going to eliminate this disease, because even if you had absolutely no environmental contamination of any kind, every time that a cell divides, there's always the chance that there's going to be an error. And that's how cancer is initiated. So even if there were no carcinogens whatsoever, we would still have cancer. It's a natural part of life. And I mean, obviously, the impetus is to cut down on any kind of potential carcinogen released into the environment. And there certainly are some. I mean, today we're quite concerned about the perfluoroalkyl substances, the PFASs as they are called, because these are found in so many products, you know, in all the food wraps, food packaging, raincoats, firemen's equipment, firefighting foam, and all of these have these polyfluorinated compounds. That's a problem. But now that we know the problem, there are also ways to reduce the release of these into the environment. So it's a struggle because, as I said earlier, analytical chemistry now gives us the possibility of detecting all of these things. But detecting them does not necessarily mean that they're doing harm. That has to be further investigated.
Would you say the organic food is better than the, let's say, regular one? And also
depends on, you know, what you mean by better. In terms of organic, there are regulations so that any pesticide that is used cannot be a synthetic pesticide. It can only be a substance that occurs in nature. However, this is one of the biggest myths that is out there, that a substance that is natural is better than a synthetic material. That equation just does not hold. Obviously, arsenic compounds, which have been widely used in organic agriculture as a pesticide, are highly toxic, but they can be used because they occur in nature. When a pesticide is regulated, let's say in Canada or in the U.S., that regulation is not based on its source, not whether it comes from a plant or from a chemical factory. That is based on what we know about that substance and how it has been studied. So in Canada, the Pesticide Management Regulatory Agency is what guides what can be used. And they regulate organic foods and conventional foods. So if a pesticide is used in organic agriculture, it has to pass exactly the same tests as in conventional agriculture. So there's nothing dangerous about those pesticides, the same way that there's nothing dangerous about the ones that are manufactured in factories either, because they're all regulated the same way. Now, what is true with organic agriculture is that they are not allowed to use any genetically modified food or its component. So if someone is adverse to that for philosophical reasons or for whatever reason, yes, they can choose organic because they're guaranteed not to have any genetic modified components. I don't think that there's any issue with genetic modification. I don't think that there's any problem at all. You know, if you choose for philosophical reasons to avoid GMOs, then you go for organic. Where organic is more likely to be beneficial is that it's more likely to be fresher, closer to the, you know, organic produce is more likely to be sold closer to the time that it was picked. But I don't think that nutritionally there's a significant enough difference to compensate for the price difference. And, you know, studies have shown that consumers who eat only organic actually eat fewer fruits and vegetables because of the expense that is involved. And one thing that we certainly know nutritionally is that fruits and vegetables should be our focus. And the more of these you eat, the better. So if someone restricts their fruit and vegetable intake because they want organic and they can't afford it because it's too expensive, they're not doing themselves good.
Does the government do a good job checking the food and the everything we eat, or?
Well, obviously it has to be done on a random sampling basis. You know, not every apple that you eat can be tested. So, you know, I mean, I've certainly worked with PMRA and with the regulatory agencies in Canada. I know how they work, and they do as good a job as it is possible to do. And it is a very, you know, effective statistical way that they do this. And it's very rare that you find, you know, pesticide residues above accepted levels. Imported products are checked the same way. So, you know, it may come from China, but it has to abide by Canadian regulations. Is it possible that a shipment of some tainted food gets through? Of course it's possible, because we don't have a perfect system. But I think the system is very good. Food-related illness is, percentage-wise, it's a very, very low percentage. I mean, what we really worry about most there is microbial contamination, you know, bacterial contamination, viral contamination. And it's rare that that happens. You know, the more, I guess, the greater concern is residues of tiny amounts of other substances that get into the food. You know, the phthalates from plasticizers, the tiny plastic particles, you know, microplastics, residues of various industrial components, and, you know, residues of medications, I mean, which are there in almost vanishingly small amounts. But whether or not cumulatively they may pose a hazard, it's almost impossible to determine.
Professor Schwartz, how can we protect our immune system? Is there any way, any recipe to protect our immune system, the right thing?
First of all, you know, the immune system is a very, very complex network of organs and of different kinds of blood cells. And you know, so this idea that you hear so much about these days to boost the immune system, this is not a scientific term. This is a marketing term. You can boost a car battery. You can boost a Wi-Fi signal. You can even boost your muscles by doing exercise. You can't boost the immune system. This is not one entity that you can boost. The best way to make sure that your body functions properly is to combine a healthy diet with exercise. This is what we know. Now, the question is, what is the healthy diet? And the more and more we learn about diet, the more and more we discover that it is a mostly plant-based diet. And you know, I mean, that is something that is not so convenient to hear for most people, certainly in North America, because they've grown up with the quote Western diet, you know, with the hamburgers, the hot dogs, the pizzas, whatever. But we're learning that that's not the best diet. And the closer we are to a plant-based diet, although I don't think it's necessary to be exclusively, but I think the Mediterranean kind of diet is what we are focusing on, where the main building blocks are whole grains, and then fruits and vegetables, and olive oil, which seems to be significant, and smaller servings of you know, of red meat. That's where all of the research is pointing. So if we emphasize that with exercise, I mean, unfortunately, we can't bottle exercise, but it's the dynamic duo is exercise combined with the proper diet. But again, you know, even when we talk about the Mediterranean diet, I mean, people tend to you know, oversimplify that. There's not one Mediterranean diet, right? People in Lebanon don't eat the same way as people in Italy or in Greece. But, I mean, there are some common features, and olive oil is one of those common features. And also that they eat more fruits and vegetables and less red meat. That's really the common feature. And there are diets now that we refer to as anti-inflammatory diets. Okay. And these are the diets that are linked to immunity. Now, how do we know what is an inflammatory or anti-inflammatory diet? Because, I mean, inflammation is really the body's way of fighting invaders, right? Inflammation is the practical aspect of the immune system. That's how the immune system works, is by triggering inflammation and the release of white blood cells, which will then eat up bacteria, they'll eat up viruses, etc. Well, there are various ways that we can measure the level of inflammation in a body. These are so-called markers of inflammation. And these are things like the C-reactive protein or the sedimentation rate, certain proteins like interleukin-6. These are all markers of inflammation. So there have been a number of studies where they have sampled people's blood, measured these markers, and looked at their diet. And that's how we can say that people who eat a lot of fruits, a lot of green vegetables, little red meat, have lower markers of these inflammation. So there is scientific evidence for these so-called anti-inflammatory diets. But the diet that we recommend is an anti-inflammatory diet, or you know, a diet that makes sure that our immune function works as best as possible, is the same kind of diet that we've been recommending to reduce the risk of heart disease, to reduce the risk of cancer, reduce the risk of diabetes. The overall diet is mostly a plant-based diet. And, you know, but that's a hard message to get across to North Americans. And also, you know, the idea that replacing a meat-based hamburger with a plant-based hamburger, that's a major improvement. That's not necessarily the case. You know, you always have to look at the overall diet. So we know what to do. It's just getting people to do it.
Personally, what do you prefer, bottled water or tap water?
I use tap water, although I do run it through a Brita filter simply because I find that it improves the taste somewhat. But I have no issue with drinking tap water. I have an issue with bottled water, not for the quality of the water, but for the bottles, because this is an environmental disaster. The first of all, to squander petroleum reserves, which are, you know, not unlimited, on making the plastic used for the billions of bottles that are consumed around the world, and the improper disposal of those bottles, because only about a quarter of them are recycled. The rest end up being thrown into garbage. They end up in landfills, or they end up in the oceans, where from the buffeting of the waves, they break down and eventually they become microscopic particles, which are a real issue. So for me, that's the problem with bottled water. It's not the water, it's the bottle.
Thank you very much, Professor Schwartz. And what would you like to send a message? I mean, to our listeners, what would be your message to our listeners?
Well, I think emphasis on what we've been talking about is that diet is important, and it is something that we can control. And obviously, our body functions based upon what we put into it, because food is the only raw material that ever goes into our body. So it pays, you know, attention to give to food and water. But you don't have to be neurotic about it. Our food supply and our water supply in North America is very good. You just have to know how to choose properly. And you can choose properly. You go into the supermarket, you should spend most of your time around the periphery of the store, you know, where you have the fresh stuff, not in the middle where you have all of the boxed things. So it's getting people to do the right thing, and especially getting them to exercise. That's really where the effort has to be. And of course, education is constantly an issue, and to learn how to separate myths from facts, which is a very difficult thing to do for people who are not scientifically minded and, you know, who've not had extensive science backgrounds. So I would say that, you know, you have to feed your mind as well with the right information. and be aware of the fact that there are a lot of people out there who are giving the wrong information because they have money to make off of it. And you have to be careful listening to anybody who wants to sell you something. And, you know, if they're marketing a supplement, be careful about everything that they say, because what they want to do is snare you to buy the product.
Thank you very much.
Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90.3 FM CKUT. Hi everybody, listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marcaro.
Astăzi, pe la 5 mă văd cu ea. Nu știu ce m-așteaptă. Poate pe la 8 e cu altcineva. Iubire nedreaptă. Acum că ai ajuns departe, vreau să te întreb. Mă iubesc sau mă iubesc? Pe la 5 mă văd cu ea. Nu știu ce m-așteaptă. Poate pe la 8 e cu altcineva. Iubirea-i nedreaptă. Acum că ai ajuns departe, vreau să te întreb.
Good evening. The time roundabout now on your dial should read 9 p.m. You're listening to Hotel the Blues here on 90.3 CKUT FM. To get tonight's program started off, here's Buddy Johnson and his number, Walk 'em.